Welcome to the Gels 365 World Cup podcast. I'm Simon Head. Joining me this week are Dan Ferdinand.
I'm always first.
Right, okay. Well, you're first again.
Well done.
Stuart Hall.
Afternoon.
And Simon Pitney.
Hello.
You might detect a slightly downbeat tone to our voices this morning. It's the morning after the weekend before England turned up and played like a pub team and got soundly thrashed by the Germans. Dan, what was your take on it? It wasn't exactly the rousing performance we were looking for, was it, really?
I mean, I said it before the tournament started, if this team didn't win the World Cup, it was for the first time. We can't blame the manager, yet every publication in the land seems to be calling for Capello's head. I guess that particularly is an absolute disgrace. Take the first goal, for instance. As a five-year-old at a park with your dad, you learn not to go giant foot run underneath the ball. You learn two things when you're defending. You learn not to let it bounce and not to just run underneath it. And John Terry running underneath it, Matthew Upshaw didn't come round. I don't care, I don't care what manager you've got, how much you pay him. When your two centre backs do that in the first 10 minutes of a game,
you can't legislate for crap defending like that.
What are you going to do? And then, and again, in the second half, Glenn Johnson, there's a free kick 25 yards out. Lampard's already hit the crossbar. He's obviously going to shoot. What is Glenn Johnson doing, basically, as a right winger? Get back and defend. Immediately they break and they score. And, you know, Barry wasn't quick enough. Where was the pace in the side? I personally call for, not Capello, but wholesale changes in that team. Look at the under-21s. Semi-final of the European Championships 4 years ago. And final of the European Championships last year. Our young sides have done well in tournaments. I think it's time to step some of these boys up and to move some of this old guard off, because it's I've had enough.
Stu?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that, Danny boy. There's nothing to add on that. You can't,
Where did you watch it, Stu?
I watched it at a barbecue with some friends, and
you thought you were watching Spain.
And I was told about half the time that Spain weren't playing, because if they were, it would probably have been a lot worse. I decided after the third goal to actually go and play American football in the garden. It was that bad.
Blimey.
I much more enjoyed the American football.
There's probably more tackles in the garden than there were out on the pitch at Bloemfontein. It wasn't good, was it?
No, not at all, mate.
So had you seen Lampard's shot off the crossbar? You must have done then.
Yeah, saw Lampard shot off the crossbar. Yeah, well done, Lampard. Great. What did he do for the other three games and the rest of that game, to be fair?
So are there any England players for you from the games, the three, four matches you've played, that can actually come home and actually think, well, I did my bit?
Joe Hart.
Well,
he's bit.
Yeah.
David James.
I thought James
Michael
did
Carrick. He did his job.
Ashley Cole.
I think there were three players. I think Ashley Cole did all right. I think Steven Gerrard, bearing in mind the limitations of the position he's been asked to play,
did okay.
And I thought David James did all right. You don't agree with
James? I'll agree with James and Cole, but not Gerrard.
Okay, go on.
Right, I'm sorry, I can't promise I'm going to be entirely polite during this. I am actually really, really, really angry.
Yeah.
Fabio Capello, he picked a system, we qualified, most amount of goals scored in qualification, everything's rosy. We have one dodgy performance against Algeria, and guess what? The players are complaining. It's the system, it's this, that. No, it's because you're crap and you're not doing your job properly. Okay, nothing to do with Capello, it's the same system, everything's fine, you know what you're doing. Everyone always says international football, you want to try and make it like a club, play the same system, get a sense of togetherness, consistency of approach. That's what we're doing. But because the players don't play well in one game, for whatever reason, maybe they can't be bothered, all of a sudden it's the system's fault, it's not the system's fault, it's your fault. Then the boot camp thing. Sorry, it was only your second game of the tournament. Okay, if it had been semi-finals and you're feeling, do you know what, we need a breather, we need to let some pressure off, I get it. Two games in, we played crap, so let's think of an excuse. Oh yeah, I don't like the boot camp mentality. Rubbish. It's because you're not doing your job properly. And I just genuinely think that Capello has just gone, do you know what? What am I dealing with here? A bunch of idiots. So I'm not giving them an excuse. They're going to do as I tell them to do. And if they fail, then I think, me personally, I don't blame Capello. He didn't get everything right, but I'm behind him more than I'm behind the players. If anyone's to blame, I'm blaming the players this time, because we had Sven, whether we like him or not, decent manager. Couldn't get anything out of them. McLaren, a bit of a joke, but still couldn't get anything out of them.
Yeah, but McLaren has come out and he's won the title.
Well, yeah.
he's actually done pretty all right well. Since.
So, how bad was he, really?
And Campello has won titles wherever he's been massively successful. And guess what? He still can't get anything out of them. So, I'm sorry, it's about time this golden
common denominator is the players.
It's the freaking players' fault.
Yeah. So, I think what I would. You know, I watch as many games as I can anyway, but. England at no point played as a team, and that was the most annoying thing. And I went round to my mate's place. I rushed back from a wedding at the weekend to get there, and it was first question I was asked, "Si, we're going to win this?" And I said, "Yeah, we're going to win this 2-0." They said, "Why?" Because England have been rubbish and Germany have looked sort of all right in spells. And I said, "Because player for player, we've got more experience of big games."
Yeah,
I said, and I'm happy that we're playing Germany rather than Ghana because I thought. We were more likely to throw in another bad performance against a team that perhaps we didn't respect so much. I thought playing Germany, there are no excuses. You know what you're up against. You've got to raise the game. And they didn't. I mean, they played like a collection of individuals. Germany,
idiots.
Player for player, even if you look just transfer value, if you're going to, you know, you can argue ability. Transfer value, our squad was worth a lot more, or our starting 11 worth a lot more money than them. The difference, they knew what they were doing. They played to a system that suited their players, and their players all did a job for the team.
No, I just like to butt in. I don't think that system necessarily did suit the players. I think, but the players, bit the butt, did what they had to do for their nation and for the World Cup. Because I look at that, and barring really Utsu and Klose up front. You know, Podolski wide left, giving him a job to try. Sometimes try and back. I know he doesn't always. Muller, that boy's a striker. He's not a wide right attacking
as well.
But what did they do? They bit the butt. They stood up. He was 20 years old.
Yeah.
He scored one goal for Germany. That was in this tournament.
Yeah.
He scores twice. I mean, Utzel runs. Yeah. I mean, I said it. We all said it before the game. Barry has got to stay close to him. We said it all before the game. I mean, I made the point that I was worried about Lahm because Barry would have to look after Utzel so much. The boy just won that first half hour. I think the referee was closer to him.
There was so much wrong with that performance.
I think two things. Firstly, we've all said before how much we're going to miss Owen Hargreaves, and the moment just as the fourth goal started, and went, Gareth Barry's got about a 10-yard head start, and then he goes, "Do you know what? I'm going to do slow motion running."
It was like running through treacle.
It was, and with Matthew Upson turning circle of an absolute massive ship. You're like, "What is going on?"
On a cruise ship? Their turning circle is actually really, really tight. They're really manoeuvrable these days. I'd just like to say that's unfair to the industry.
Simon and. I agree, Ashley Cole had an okay tournament, and David James, okay.
Yeah.
Stephen Gerrard, right, where was he playing yesterday? Where did Capello ask him to play?
Yeah, he was...
Left midfield, yeah?
Why did he spend
most of his game in central midfield or over to the right? Right, Ashley Cole, one of the best left-backs in the world, if not the best. Even he can't do everything on his own. Okay, Stephen Gerrard, I don't care the fact you're Stephen Gerrard, you've got a great name, you're captain of Liverpool, captain of your country. If the manager asks you to play left midfield, just play left midfield. Mm. Just do your freaking job. Off he's wandering, doing his thing, massively unbalanced, and Podolski's goal, the build up was down the right hand side, so just flipped over. I don't know where Gerrard was. Mm. So, players, please, just do not come all of us say, "Oh, Steve Gerrard, one of the best midfielders in the world, John Terry, one of the best defenders in the world." No, you're a bunch of prima donnas.
I would like to ask a question actually.
Go on.
How long will it take for fans to forget this? The debacle. Come August, come the Premier League season, come Frank Lampard hat trick on day one, for instance. How long is it going to take before this bad taste is really out of our mouths?
Right. Okay. This is quite an easy question to answer. You can split England's football fans as a whole into two groups: those that support Premier League teams and those that don't. Those that don't formed the majority of the fans who were out there watching England. And it was mentioned on Five Live, they made a very good point. Everywhere you go, you see the Cross of St George flag, everywhere. And they've all got the names of where they come from, the teams they support. Virtually no Premier League flags there, right? All what I would call dyed in the wool, proper football fans, not glory supporters who pitch up because they've got a box or they've got a mate who's got a box. People who actually pay their season ticket money, go week in, week out, go to crappy places, get treated like cattle. And because they love their team, they're the real England fans, and they were the guys who spent thousands of pounds to go out there. They won't forget this, and we've had it for a while now, and I don't think they'll forget. Premier League fans will, and we had this discussion actually the other day. I was asked, I support Gillingham, right, we're in League Two. They said, what would you rather have? Would you rather see Gillingham promoted into League One or England win the World Cup? And I said, I'd rather see England win the World Cup. Now, if you asked a Premier League fan whether they'd have their team win their division or win the World Cup, they'd say, balls to England, it's my club. Now, I love my club, and you know, that's fine, but the World Cup is something special, and I think that should be the pinnacle of every single footballer and every football fan. If you can watch your team win in a World Cup, that's got to be the pinnacle. Whereas what the Premier League has done, and to a degree what the Champions League has done, it has completely separated the top level of football from international football. And that's what's killing the game, because you've got all these guys there, they're paid a lot of money. That's fine, because there's a lot of money in the game, they're the best. But that money doesn't trickle down, and our Premier League has not been rigged to actually benefit the national team. And that was the selling point of it in the first place. It was going to produce better players for our national team. I think only 30% of players who walk out on the Premier League opening day this season will be eligible for England.
However, they are a better side than they were 20 years ago. Man for man, but look at the results. I'm not saying
1990 semi-finals, 1986 quarter-finals. You know, have we progressed since then? No.
Just to address your question, Dan, I agree with Simon. I think it's very simple. The guys who, you know, Dave from Stone Square follows Chelsea, he'll have forgotten a bit. Second weekend of the season, it'll be like, oh, Lampard's amazing, Terry's amazing, you know, all the rest of it. But the actual England fans, and Simon said, it's been going on for a while. This is the second World Cup in a row where England has been distinctly underwhelming. I know we made the last eight last time, but it was hardly exciting football. We hardly set the world on fire. We were terrible. And as soon as we ran up against a half-decent team, guess what? We're out. I think we're reaching tipping point. I think I'd always want England to win, and I'll always get excited about it, I'll always get passionate. But, well, as I've said, I'm getting to the point where I couldn't care less about the players putting an English shirt. Like, I've had enough of this generation of players just lying to me week in, week out, of we're the best players in the world. And the press saying we're the best in the world, we've got a real chance. We haven't. And I think a lot of people are reaching tipping point, and I think that's why, despite the press going mad and saying, you know, Capello's got to go, I think a lot of people actually go, actually, I think it's the players' fault. I think Capello, if you ask a man on the street, I think, no, Capello's fine. He's doing what he should be doing. Make them toe the line.
If I was sort of deciding where to go from here, I'd make major changes. What I'm about to say is completely utopian and won't happen, right? If some of it happens, then I think we'll benefit. Number one, I would get rid of Fabio Capello. Not because he's a bad manager, but because his style of management, I don't think is compatible with the English style of play. And the other thing that worried me was he's had the team for about 41 games and he couldn't arrange a back four. He picked players...
And replaced him with who?
I would replace him with an English manager.
Who?
I'd be quite happy to see someone like Harry Redknapp or Roy Hodgson in there.
He's never going to get a job, and we can't.
Roy Hodgson could easily get that job. He's a good technical manager. He's probably the most qualified Englishman for the job, from a technical and from an experience point of view. Also, what I would do, I would say to all the players who are over the age of 25, thanks very much. We're drawing a line now. Golden generation. I don't know who made that phrase up.
Exactly.
It came from the Portuguese, actually. The Portuguese of Figo and Couto. They were the golden generation. Then some journo.
And for the thing is, they didn't win anything.
And they won nothing either. So it's a bit of a misnomer that. So say cheerio, thanks very much. You've had a few goes, not really done it. What you do now is you say the Euros in 2 years' time. We're not going to the Euros to win that. We're going there as a learning experience. We're building for the next World Cup. You bring in your Adam Johnsons, you bring in your Jack Wilshires, you bring in your Jack Rodwells, Joe Hart, James Milner should be in the middle of that midfield. And if you pick... I sat down this morning, because it's been quite quiet this morning. I wrote down a 23-man squad of players, and I think only three of them were in the current England squad. I think four. Ashley Cole, Dawson... I didn't pick them, right. Actually. I went for... I was looking for really young players who were coming through, and I without much My only problem was goalkeepers, actually. And I ended up going back to Robinson and Kirkland. But because there aren't any young goalkeepers other than Hart.
Loach
doesn't look anywhere near Premier League level yet. But what I've done, I've picked a squad. And that's basically what I would do. I'd get the manager and say, right, I want you to pick a squad for 4 years' time.
Yeah.
Keep them together. Chop and change one or two. But basically, get your nucleus of the squad. And it's Club England, basically.
Yeah.
Meet together as often as we possibly can. The other thing we need to do is we need to get hold of the Premier League. The FA have got to...
Well, that's not impossible.
The FA have got to get control back of their game because they've sold too much of it away with the Premier League. And they've got... It could come to a point where the Premier League split away. I don't think that's such a bad thing in some ways, because if it means the FA has more control and say, right, you have to play in the FA divisions to play for your country, then we'll see what the players will do. And it'll be the older ones will bugger off and play for the Premier League. And at least, right, I'd rather have a team made out of Championship players or lower half Premier League players who are young and will give it their all and get knocked out at the second round stage than the sort of system we've got now.
Stu, you're 21.
Yep.
Given the option, your Premier League player, Premier League breaks away, you can go and chase 6 to 10 million a year, probably 10 million if it's a new Super League, playing against what would be billed at the start anyway as the greatest competition of all time. Top flight football every single week. No Boltons.
You'll never play for your country.
For your country. Because, you know, for me, I'm 28. I'm chasing the cash. I've got family to go.
Well, that's the thing.
And so that's why, you know, you would want to start. That's fair enough.
I think it's, you know, what I just said there, I said it's utopian and won't ever happen. But what the FA needs to do somehow is get everything in order again. The football pyramid's gone completely skewed.
It's given me an idea. What would happen if the FA turned around? I'm not even talking about breakaway. FA turned around and said, because you're your own entity, to play for England, you have to play in the Football League. Therefore, mainly the Championship.
I think there would be an outcry from Premier League supporters and from Premier League fans.
Well, you're right,
they haven't done it for
12 years.
No, exactly. So, but I mean, if they turn around and say, right, balls to this is what we're going to do. I mean, when Germany got knocked out at Euro 2000 by us, Shearer's diving head and knocked them out of the group stages, they looked at their players, they said, they're old, they're slow, they're overpaid, and they can't play. We haven't got any talent coming through. What are we going to do? We've got a massive immigrant community in Germany. They said, let's actually put some money into academies. Let's encourage minority communities to play football.
Has that come out? Has that started to work for
them? Right. Look at their team. And also, they place their faith in youth. Five of the players that won the World Championship under 21s were
against
in that side. We're in
4-0.
We're in that side yesterday. How many of ours were in there? Yeah. One, Milner.
This utopian idea, that's too political for me, but I fully agree that this whole cull of a generation to go, right, 25 for me is a bit young, but I'd just go, right, if you're over 27, then thank you very much. And that would mean, obviously, we'd get rid of some fantastic players. So Frank Lampard, I'm not his biggest fan, but I thought he was a bit unlucky yesterday with a couple of chances. And he is a very, very good player, and I definitely have him in the squad. However, I do think the overarching need is bigger. So I'm for a cull. I think we should just, let's get a Facebook group started. Everyone over 27, no.
No, I don't like it, just over 27. I think that really is just picking...
Can we make an exception for Ashley Cole? Because we've really done have a replacement for him.
That would be my biggest concern is let Ashley Cole. But I mean, I do think now Capello. I think he should start. I think he does have to look at it. I think my personal utopia is not quite as extreme as Mr. Head's, but I would like to see, as I say, a complete wash of the team. But that would start with turning around and going, Wayne Rooney, you're now my captain because you are the best player and you are going to be the best player. But for that, you need to, and making him captain does two things. One, I think it will start calming him down. I think it will add to him. He's a dad now. He's a young dad now. He's got a young little son. I think there's maturity coming into him, but he's still yet frustrated for England. He hasn't always been, but sometimes he can become very frustrated. And I think making him captain and gives him that responsibility, but also then takes away from that whole, how is he going to play within a team? He is the team, and you're giving him your full faith. For that, then you're turning around and saying, but we're going to play you wherever you want to play, but for that, you then need to perform. And I think, bring it on. My other concern really is Joe Hart needs to leave Man City. He's not going to get in that side. Needs to play first team Premier League football. I'd love him to go to Arsenal, but I can't see Man City being stupid enough to sell him.
Yeah.
But you never know. And I think there's a few other players that need to do it. And I think part of the problem is, at what point did these kids actually play?
Muller
played in the Champions League final. Then they lost it, but he still played in the Champions League.
There were five Bayern Munich players, six Bayern Munich players in that team.
Yeah, and I think that for me is always a danger. If you don't play early, it's not even early enough, but you know, if Chelsea have got a young English midfielder, is he really going to get in front of Frank Lampard?
It's like Richards, isn't it? He started, and then Man City got all the money, and that's it. He got knocked on the head.
He was one of the ones on my list.
Yeah, same.
So was Nedumeluwa. He'd be in there as well.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think he'd be.
He's a good young player. Yeah, so I think there are good young players out there. I think the problem we've got in the Premier League that isn't so much the problem in the Bundesliga. All the players in our squad play in the Premier League. All the players in the German squad play in the Bundesliga, and that's quite rare in international football these days. But what you find is all the players in the German side tend to play for the top few clubs. Whereas once you sort of scrape down a little bit in our squad, we're picking players from here, there, and everywhere, and players who aren't regular starters for their clubs. We're putting substitutes on. We're putting Emil Heskey on. All right, the reason why we put him on answers on a postcard, but we put him on. He can't get in the Villa team because Gabby Agbonlahor is better than him, right? Gabby Agbonlahor, not in the England squad. A better player, different player, but a better player.
Mm-hmm.
You got Sean Wright Phillips. He's coming on. He can't get in the Man City team because Adam Johnson's keeping him out. Adam Johnson. If ever our team needed something, it was a naturally left-sided wide man. Wasn't in the squad. Ashley Young is a better player than Sean Wright Phillips. Ashley Young's got an attitude problem, allegedly. But
allegedly.
These players actually weren't on my little list that I did.
Ashley Young's on mine, Bonner's on mine.
It wouldn't be difficult.
Jack Rodwell's on mine.
To say everybody in the current England squad, with maybe two or three exceptions, you know, your Rooney, your Ashley Cole, Michael Dawson, Joe Hart, Milner. Everybody else, you could say, okay,
Glenn Johnson,
clear the slate. Well, I don't rate Glenn Johnson.
As
a right-sided midfield player, yes.
I think. I honestly think.
Not as a fullback, please.
But I think if you draw a line under, I think you need to. That's the type of player you can go. Listen, you go forward, great, but these are the things you need to work on. And I think that's maybe the other problem that we have. I think you actually said it when you talk about your utopia. How much time do they get to spend to each other? I'm not talking about games. I'm talking about where the Capello can sit down and say, look, this is where you're going wrong. Just a couple of meetings and a little bit of training. I think we don't have enough of that. You know, I still think we play too many games.
Yeah.
It's no coincidence that teams with one competitions don't have two cup competitions.
I don't think we can underestimate the language issue with Capello either. I really don't. Because if you're at half time in a game and the team are not performing,
but we've been good second half.
But what I'm saying is, we've got a manager here who can't communicate fully with his team. And if you're talking about tactics, getting people to do very, very specific jobs within the game, and you're having to run everything through an interpreter, or having to run occasional things through an interpreter, the instructions might eventually get across, but the whole tone of it is not going to be there. You want somebody there who, A, you can understand, B, who will inspire you, and C, will actually send you out there feeling like you're on top of the world.
Oh, hang on a minute. If you cannot be inspired, A, by one of the greatest managers of the world, and B, you're playing in a World Cup,
and C, you're playing against Germany.
There's something wrong with you.
Well, that's also,
we lost, and 4-1's fine. I don't really mind that we didn't win the World Cup, because I don't really think we have the best players, and the ability to overhype ourselves is clearly endemically British. But we did not go out with a fight at all.
That was the thing.
It was just the most limpid display you've ever seen.
I've watched every World Cup, admittedly not being live for them, but I've watched them all. Yeah. And I love watching all the old footage of the World Cups, and I've never ever seen England go out of a World Cup without putting up a fight.
There was no fire in the belly.
There's always been, certainly in my lifetime, there's always been, they were unlucky, or okay, we weren't quite as good as them, but blimey, didn't we try? That didn't happen. We, on paper, we had all the tools to beat Germany, except,
when attitude.
When there's people talking about, okay, Capello's got to go, and I've said it myself, but once they're on the pitch, it is the players. The players have got to turn around and say, and like John Terry when he did his press conference the other day, and he was talking about the Slovenia game at the time, but it stands true anyway. He said, if we can't get up for the World Cup and put in a performance, then we've all got to stand here and face the music and put our hands up and say,
brilliant, because he'd be first in line.
That is exactly what he said. He said, I'll be the first one to come out and do it.
Yeah, but brilliant. You can say it all you want.
He said he had a word with Capello, didn't he? And it's just hot air coming out of his mouth. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything.
All right, I've got one more question before I shut up. Burton has now been agreed, it's now been, I think, pretty much paid for.
Oh, you mean the National Football Stadium?
The National Football Stadium, the planning and work, I believe, is due to start any time now, any week now.
Yeah.
Stu, is this going to make any difference?
It's got to, in some stage, it has to, doesn't it? Otherwise, we're in all sorts of trouble going into the next World Cup, the next European Championship. It's got to make some type of difference, isn't
it's
it?
It's going to take 10 years to get any results out of
it. But, I mean, is it going to happen in the current players? I mean, is it going to happen
in the But it's a bigger picture thing. This should have been built 5-6 years ago.
We can have the best facilities in the world.
We have them.
We can have academically very, very good coaches, but it's going to be the philosophy of the place that makes a difference. So are we just going to be saying, right, to play Premiership football you need to be a superb athlete, you have to have a great engine, you've got to be able to run? Or are we going to say, do you know what, to make a difference at the top level of international football, which the National Centre of Excellence should be striving for, you've got to be the most skillful player, and all the other stuff will just come with your responsibility of being a top class athlete. Yeah. But if you cannot, like Schweinsteiger yesterday was absolutely fantastic. You put the ball in his left foot, you put the ball in his right foot, he can go either way.
And he never
looks under threat because he's just so
comfortable.
And
he's
the best player on the pitch by a mile. No. I'd rather have Schweinsteiger than someone like, I'm trying to think of someone who's an athlete but is actually crap, Matthew Upson.
Yeah. Something I've been coming up with here. I used to write for a kids' football magazine. It was written for managers and coaches rather than the kids, and one of the first features I did, we spoke to a group who were called Give Us Back Our Game, who you may have heard of in the news. I'm hoping they'll be in the news again soon. What they do, basically, they are advocating playing 3v3s, 4v4s from the youngest age that they want to play, basically. Yeah. No refs, let them ref their own games, 3v3s, 4v4s. And the idea is, it forces players to develop.
Yeah.
Because you get more touches of a ball than you do when you play 11-a-side, or 7-a-side even. You've got a smaller playing area, you're going to see more of the ball, you're going to have to take players on, and learn to take players on. You're also going to have to learn that people are going to try and take you on, and how to deal with it. You have to learn about beating a man, finding a teammate. There was a University of Manchester, I think it was, study. It was a massive thesis that they did on it. And the difference in involvement and development between playing that and playing normal football as kids do now, whether it be 7-a-side or 11-a-side, is immense. And all the best technical players in the world, a lot of them come from South America or areas where there aren't facilities. Yeah, the argument of facilities is fine, but
it's got to be the philosophy.
It's about kids who just play, and they'll play anywhere in any kind of area. With anything as a ball, and they learn so much doing that. They're all comfortable on the ball. You watch Argentina play, their worst technical player will be as good as our best technical player,
probably,
because they are that good, and they know what they're doing with the ball without even thinking. And all they're thinking the minute the ball comes to them is, who am I passing to? what's around me, and they know it before the ball even gets to their feet. English players, they'll think about, we'll control the ball, we'll look up, we'll see who's
how
about.
Quickly can
by
we
then, bang, someone's on you. Yeah. And we did, as I say, we did a big feature on this a few years back, and I think if we can get that into our into kids' football and have it for 10 years and have more coaches, because I think England, if you look at all the major nations in Europe,
it's very damaged.
We've got the least number of coaches with the top UEFA coaching qualifications. We've got about 7,000-8,000, I think. Spain have got like 28,000.
Yeah, 15,000 applied last year, didn't they?
Yeah.
Compared to our 246 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, so you know, in terms of just sheer number, and
you say a word and then you come out with a killer stat. Right?
Yeah, all these things here, you know, this isn't going to be fixed overnight. This is going to take a decade to actually see the results. Germany are seeing the results now because they made a decision in 2000.
Yeah.
And it's a big job for the FA to say, okay, we're going to effectively write off the next 10 years in terms of achievement. In real terms, it'll make no difference because we're not achieving anything.
Right, I don't think we need to write off
Premier League. They still should be good enough to qualify for the tournaments because England are still going to get easy groups, seeded ones, aren't they?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It's not that big a
risk.
It's
not an enormous
really.
Risk, no.
Yeah, I agree
so
with
I think, you know, I think there's definitely scope for the development and improvement. When Burton's up and that's up and running, that will help. It will help. But I think the biggest change, and it's the one that's least likely to happen, is a change of the overall culture of English football towards everything has to, yes, the Premier League, yes, the Championship, but, you know, representing your country playing for the national team has to be the ultimate. And for most Premier League players, it isn't. And that manifests itself in their performances.
I had really two really fantastic pieces of information about kids' football, and I think it's the inherent problem, literally just running off what you've just said. Number one, I definitely in South America, and I think they might have started it a little bit in Spain, and I think the philosophy in Holland is just to pass the ball anyway. But they often use an undersized, almost like kind of a quite heavy flat ball.
No, yeah. We used it over here.
You
it's
cannot,
the foam. It's
yeah,
the
you
Brazilian,
cannot
isn't
punt it forward. I mean, you can. I mean, if you can punt it forward, you're probably playing the wrong sport, and you should probably don't play American football or rugby.
It's not futsal, is it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Is that the heavier ball, football futsal. Yeah.
And they said the kids play with this heavy ball because you can only actually pass it 5 yards.
It doesn't come off the floor,
and it doesn't come off the floor. And also, if you did miscontrol it, you probably hurt your foot. So it's all about making sure. Making sure you can control the ball and not just punt it forward and getting out of situations by passing it in triangles. But I think for me, the one that really snapped and caught my attention was this a thing about under, I think it was actually under 18, so everyone up to 18, everyone under, not an adult, firstly, shouldn't play on a full-size pitch. It was literally that extreme. Shouldn't play on a full-size pitch. I know you said about threes and fours, brilliant.
Yeah.
And they should continue, but when they do have to get to 11s, that still shouldn't be on a full-size pitch.
Well, no, they've got small-sided football, I think, up to, I think it's up to under 12s.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to play competitive until 8, are they? And
yeah, no more league tables.
13, I think.
See, that's some of this influence from these guys, give us back our game, have really pushed that through. And the FA, to their credit, have actually taken on a lot of this, and they're now part of a consultation group, so they are beginning to open their eyes to this. Trevor Brooking,
but I know, sorry, just I also think they should. More, I think they should play in the summer, and that was the final. That was the
play
major one. Young youth kids football should be a summer game, not a winter game, because how the hell are you supposed to learn to play football in January where it's snow on the pitch or screaming down or it's
well,
muddy?
They always get cancelled, don't they? And ended up playing sort of double headers.
Double headers, exactly. So play the game in the summer where you can actually concentrate on being technically better because you're not worried about being freezing or playing. And that for me was really important.
I think it's great that we came in, we sat down, and it was England were useless. This is the World Cup.
Okay, continue.
And now we're talking about under 12s football. And it's great because that's the whole point. If you get the grassroots right and you get your infrastructure right, give it a bit of time, things will improve. You invest in youth, you've got no guarantee that you're going to get a major crop in one go, but you will see the system start to work.
I think Uruguay, they said that in the Uruguay game actually, that over the last maybe 10 or 12 years, they haven't done as well because, not because they haven't had good players, but they've only had one or two at a time.
Yeah.
And this is the first time in a long time where they've actually got that crop.
The beginning.
Where they, yeah. You know, and I think, Luke Ginn, I think we need to have maybe 30 to 35 players in the England squad. Mm. I think. And
so you think go for an England B again?
Yeah, well, no, well, it's not even necessarily playing England B games, but I think it's like, or for me anyway, I don't understand why players like Jack Rodwell, why players like Jack Wiltshire, Omi Lansbury, I know I'm going to be a bit Arsenal biased, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of players out there were not at this World Cup.
I can understand to some degree.
And I'm not saying take him in the squad, I'm saying just be at the World Cup.
Being around and about.
Being around, being the B side that the team plays against. I always go back, American football is really cool thing. They have a practice squad. The practice squad's job every single week is to learn about the team that your team is going to play next and to recreate that.
They're so, like football sparring partners, basically.
Yeah, so that's what that is your job. That is your only job, is to research what the next team is going to do, how they're going to do it, and play that way against your with the seconds, against your first team.
Not even so the Premier League is that yeah, top of mind. So is that, just well, no, 11 men to do Arsenal.
Well, no, it's not 11 men. It's about eight. Oh. I think in what's it called? I think you'd only need maybe five or six because you've got a squad anyway, and so you add then some of the younger players and stuff to play. But what I'm trying to say is, you take the young players, if the young players like those I've mentioned have done this World Cup, have been there when the media are hounding them, have been there in the hot, have done everything that it takes to get to be in a major championships, I think come 4 years' time, I think these players will be important for us. It won't come as a brand new surprise. It won't be like this big lights thing. They would have already done it. And I think every championship kid should come.
It's beginning to happen with the 21s. It is beginning to happen with the 21s. There was having Pierce as part of the senior squad and the manager of the 21s. We have started to see players graduate, but it's only been the odd one or two. Then when you see Germany, half their team, and you think, okay, you know, clearly there's scope for a bit more improvement in terms of. Because if you look at the 21 side that they lost in the final, there are players there that you probably never see in the Premier League. But, you know, it's all about putting your trust in these kids and giving them the chance at Premier League level. And that's another issue with the foreign players thing.
It's also understand they're not going to get it right every time, and there's going to be some defeats along the way and some infuriating performances, but buying into the long-term vision of, right, we're not playing for now, we're not playing necessarily for tomorrow, not necessarily for the next week, but we're playing for the future, and it's so infuriating because we're four nobodies as far as the FA is concerned, but it makes perfect common sense, doesn't it? Mm. You think, oh, how can they not see that is the right way to
Can I just say, I know how they cannot see, because the former, chairman was too busy playing Billy Big Balls to show off to his secretary. I think, you know, it's not the first time that scandal's been in that. You look at Crozier before, a few places before him. He was all about kind of managing his own personal career, now doing God knows what. These guys, I honestly think, and you said it, Brooking, but these guys, barring people like Brooking, are not in it for England or not in it for English football. They're in it because it's great to have on a CV that you were chairman or chief executive of the FA.
We need football people at the top of the FA. That's what we need. And I think Sir Trev would be he's currently the director of football development for the FA. But I think just from the things that he's already said in the past, I think he's frustrated because he can only do so much.
Yeah.
And what he actually wants to do, he's sort of prevented from doing so by whether it be red tape or bureaucracy or whatever it is. You need somebody at the top of the game who knows the game inside out, knows what it's like to play through the divisions, understands the structure, and has the respect and clout to go to other clubs, talk to them, and for them to actually listen to him. And if looking at the people within the FA, and I've worked within the FA, he is as respected a guy as you could ever meet. You know, he's probably the biggest football guy at the FA, and he's been there, he's done it. So, you know, it would do no harm.
Well, say done it. He didn't qualify for two tournaments, did he, as a player?
Well, yeah, but that wasn't down to him personally.
No, but that was also a golden age. I think that was also a golden age of English football. I think Liverpool was dominating Europe.
Yeah.
But we couldn't qualify for.
But I think what would be perfect would be if they somehow separated the business aspect from the football aspect and they say, right, he is our football guy. You have a business manager who sits alongside him, but and the, you know, the head, almost like the England's director of football, if you like, and that he's the head man for the game in this country, and you'll have and start to get more football people involved, and then hopefully we might start to see the sort of changes we want. But yeah, go on.
I was just thinking of my comparison with Bastian Schweinsteiger. A better one is I'd rather have someone like Bastian Schweinsteiger than someone like David Batty.
Yeah.
You know, very typical English player, lots of heart, lots of fire, lots of, you know, willingness to run and tackle and kick. Mm. But if you put it on his left foot, it'd probably bounce out for a throw in. Mm. So
that is, it is quite funny that Schweinsteiger played the defensive midfield role for Germany.
He played really well.
And he hasn't got a defensive tackle bone in his body.
Well, he's playing right wing, didn't he? He's
like, but yet at no point was he under pressure. When he had to track back and follow people, he did so. This is an attacking midfielding player.
It was quite interesting listening to Raphael Honigstein, who's a respected German football journalist, writes for The Guardian. On the radio he was talking, and he said that Michael Ballack getting injured actually helped the Germany team, because he's the Charlie Big Potatoes in the middle of the team. Everybody has to sort of follow by his rules, if you like. He was out of the side. Now in England team, arguably you've got four or five players in that sort of mould. So you've got your Terry, your Lampard, your Gerrard, maybe even your Rooney.
Yeah.
And everybody looks to them too much. And what Honigstein was saying about the German side is, with Ballack gone, all these other players are all capable players. It's like, okay, we've got to step up and do the business now. And as a group,
because
there was no one, you know, everyone talking about England, we're talking about Rooney mainly. He was like, oh, Rooney this, Rooney that, he's not scored yet, he's going to come good. Bang, bang, bang. Lots of pressure on the guy, and he clearly couldn't handle it. I personally think he's not fit. So he'd probably have an operation for the start of the season. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's as bad as Rooney played and as bad as his attitude appeared at times, it's unrealistic to just pin all your hopes on one guy. It's a team sport. And anyone who's, you know, even when people coming out in interviews are saying Rooney this, Rooney that, they're hiding. You know, you're in a team. The only person who came out after that game yesterday with any credit in terms of talking to the press was Joe Cole.
Yeah.
Joe Cole came out and said, no arguments, we weren't good enough. Mm. He said none of us can be proud of that. He said, we weren't good enough. He said, for me, I'm disappointed I didn't get to play as much as I would have liked. But he said, this is a team thing. He said, it's a team thing, and as a team, we weren't good enough.
It's always been a team sport. Only changed when Maradona took a rubbish Argentina team on his own to win the World Cup. So all of a sudden, if you're a slightly rubbish team, you go, right, oh, it's all on Rooney then, isn't it? Yeah. I hope there's 11 of you.
Yeah. I think it's quite funny, before the game, during the game, almost up until afterwards, everyone was caning Mertesacker. Centre back. Oh no, he's not quick. He's no good. I've been screaming out for Arsenal to sign him. I've been screaming it out long before the World Cup. Add him to Vermaelen. I know it's another foreigner, but I mean, what I'm trying to say is, everyone's going. All the pundits, Shearer did it, Dixon did it. Oh, he's rubbish. He's not good enough. Yeah, but every time the ball went in the air, it was massive in the air. And every time the ball came into the floor and needed a quick tackle, Frederick did it. They played the game as a unit. And I thought that was amazing. It was really simple.
And Terry did.
Yeah, the ball in the air, that's where he was.
Well, Terry's probably in a tiz because he wasn't playing left of the centre backs where he likes to play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so how difficult is it to play either way? I'll tell you why he doesn't like it. It's because he's too far away from Ashley Cole for Ashley to give him his
space. Yeah,
right, we'll try and wrap this up then. Just quickly go around the table. One thing that you would do, or two things. One, who's going to win this tournament? And two, would you replace the manager? If so, who with, Dan?
No to replacing the manager. Winning the World Cup. I don't know. I hope Brazil, because I've got him in the sweepstake.
Mercenary.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Yeah.
Brazil, because I've got him in the sweepstake.
Different sweepstake, obviously. You're not sharing anything.
No, sweepstake. And
we don't share.
Stick with Capello.
Stick with Capello.
100%.
Sorry?
I stick with Capello 100% and have a cull of the players.
Yeah.
And to be boring, I've said all along, it's going to be Brazil or Spain. They're the two best teams by a long way.
Right, okay. I'm going to say something completely different. I actually would change a manager. I think the manager is being paid too much and he hasn't really shown any noticeable improvement. I'd get an English manager in there, let's start from scratch and really try and do this properly. And as for the World Cup, I'm sticking with my original prediction. I think Argentina.
Slovakia.
I think Argentina. Yeah.
Ghana.
Go Slovaks. No, I think Argentina. France. Argentina will win this World Cup. They're the best side. I would love to see an Argentina Brazil final because that would be
tasty.
I'm pretty confident Maradona would fight.
Maradona versus Dunga.
That's if he didn't.
Maradona in his drug dealer suit and Dunga in his U-boat commander's coat.
Can you imagine if Argentina beat Brazil in the final? Because Pelé would make an appearance. Oh. Maradona would find his way to Pelé.
Oh, yeah.
He would find his way, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be brilliant. Right, we'll wrap that one up. That's the World Cup podcast for this week. We'll come back a bit later on.